This gives the police a temptation. When you give them the power of civil forfeiture, they got to choose between themselves or the public. Why do we want to put them in that position?
Hi, I'm Zach Weissmuller for Reason TV. We're here with Bart Wilson, the Donald P. Kennedy Endowed Chair of Economics and Law at Chapman University, where he specializes in the field of experimental economics, which seeks to test economic theory in the laboratory. The topic of your latest study was civil asset forfeiture, a topic that people at the Institute for Justice, which provided a grant for this study, have been talking about for a long time. Libertarians have been talking about it for a long time, and it was written up in the Washington Post. They're doing a three-part series on it right now, which cites your study. The New Yorker did a big story on it. It's seeping into the public consciousness, but for the people who might not know what it is yet, let's start with the basics. What exactly is civil asset forfeiture?
With states that allow civil forfeiture, the law enforcement are allowed to seize property that they suspect of being part of a crime, even though the owners of the property may not be arrested for a crime. And in most cases, they can keep all or some of those proceeds. So this can be the cash from a drug deal, or it can be actually seizing cars or homes and then reselling it.
The controversy comes in because some people say that creates an incentive to seize more and more property, so-called policing for profit. Other people say that it's a good thing because then the police departments raise revenue on their own and then they can use those resources to fight more crimes, essentially a tax on criminals. This is the controversy that you were trying to get at and the questions you were trying to answer. How did you go about doing that in this study?
I'm an experimental economist, so I build models of a simplified world and then take it to the laboratory and see what undergraduates do with it. And so we wanted to look at these trade-offs in terms of will the law enforcement subjects go after the drugs, or will they wait and try to get the cash in order to fight more crime, or will they just take the cash and that's it?
In Bart Wilson's world, four undergraduate students move avatars around a 2D game board. The red avatar represents law enforcement, the sheriff. The three blue avatars represent the public, and they mostly scoot around picking up tokens worth 3 cents each. That is, they accumulate wealth. The sheriff gets paid for collecting tokens and for knocking down walls with hammers.
That knocking down walls is like fighting crime.
Inside the walls are more tokens. Some are red tokens that only the sheriff can pick up. These are assets like drug money, off limits to the general public. Pastel tokens represent the public benefits of a safer, crime-free neighborhood. Only blue avatars can acquire those. The brightly colored tokens represent another kind of property that cops can seize, like the house of a woman whose son sells drugs on the porch without her knowledge, or the cash seized during a routine highway stop, property that the police could relinquish to the public or keep for themselves.
As soon as you give them civil forfeiture, they are collecting 95 to 97% of all those tokens. They barely leave any there for the public.
Maybe it seems obvious that most people will keep the money rather than handing it over to others. But police departments argue just the opposite when they say that civil forfeiture is still a win-win because police use the seized property to invest in more crime fighting. So this version of the game tests those incentives. The sheriff can use the money earned from solving a crime and seizing illegal assets to buy another hammer, break another wall, and give the public access to their tokens. But doing that would eat into his profits by as much as 6 cents, depending on how many tokens he leaves on the board.
In order to make the world better off, law enforcement has to leave that there for them to be better off. Because if they collect them all, then the public isn't any better off.
So were the sheriffs nice to their fellow players, or did they squeeze out as much money as possible?
In general, at best, they're not worse off. Sometimes they're worse off, and sometimes they're about the same. But never are they better off than when they have no civil forfeiture, which means they're not investing enough in fighting additional crimes and allowing the public to consume those extra tokens.
One of the more amusing and enlightening parts was actually looking at the comments that the players were making. Some of the comments you found included, OMG, he's stealing them all. He has too much power. Red has no incentive to help us. I feel so powerless. Some Reds just want to see the world burn. What kind of insights do these comments give us?
They took it very seriously and they were very upset. The same way people feel when it happens in the naturally occurring world. You know, you get stopped by the police, they take the cash that's in your car, you feel powerless. And it's exactly what the blue avatars felt.
The title of the study is Bad Laws, Bad Apples. What does this study say about that question that we started with? Are bad rules to blame, or are there just a few bad actors that are ruining things?
It's not a few people just abusing it. This is the modal tendency to abuse. But you take that power away, those same people then, in our design, help the public even when they don't have a financial incentive to do so. They could choose just to maximize earnings and not help the people up, but they then do so. So for me, that's pretty strong evidence that it's the rules that are creating the incentives for them to police for profit.
How do you extrapolate what happens in a simulation of undergraduates playing a computer game to what police officers are doing in the real world?
These results are not 65-35, 70-30. These are 95-5 kind of behaviors that we see accumulated over the course of an hour experiment. And it's robust from group after group after group. And so undergraduates are humans too, and this seems to be a robust finding that we're seeing in our sample. This gives the police a temptation when faced with a zero-sum world. When you give them the power of forfeiture, they gotta choose between themselves or the public. Why do we want to put them in that position? We don't do it with double jeopardy. We don't do it with innocent until proven guilty. For we could say, oh, there are just a few bad prosecutors out there who keep punishing, try to go after the same people. No, we just say we're not going to allow them that possibility. There's a temptation, a human temptation, to put yourself before others when it's just you or me.
Bart Wilson, thank you very much for talking to us.
Glad to. Thank you.
For Reason TV, I'm Zach Weissmuller. For further discussion of experimental economics as a field of study, check out our previous interview with Wilson by clicking on the displayed video now.